Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine. We talk about TV every week. I'm Jason Snell, and across the internet from me, Chief TV Critic at The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hello.
Hey, Jason. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I am better now.
That's good. We're running a little late this week. We had to delay our recording, but we're here. We're here because we care.
Yes, we care.
That's a really bad slogan. We're here because we care. It's like service is our business.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. That's not a slogan, but yes, good. Not a lot going on. I think you've posted in the last week, you posted one new review, which was of Togetherness, which we already mentioned because the Duplass brothers came up in a different context. But Togetherness, which is back on HBO, is it this week? This weekend?
Yes, it starts Sunday.
All right.
And so we'll post that review and have that up. You know, it's one of those shows I really like, but I actually had fun writing that review because it made me think a lot about, and I don't write a whole lot of reviews in first person, by the way. So it just made me think about the excess amount of half-hour dramedies we have and how little comedy there is in any of them. It's definitely, most of it's not laugh-out-loud humor. I think Louie does that the best. But, you know, it's not Veep. It's not Silicon Valley. These things are just mostly dramas. And the humor is, like, lightly earned, or earned, but lightly laughable. You're not, like, holding your sides. And there's so much of that, and they just get to be such a downer. And I think that I wanted to write the review based on the fact that, like, because we have an excess of amount of television, we have so many more of those shows than we might have. And then it's a byproduct of having too much TV that if you marinate yourself in these kind of really introspective, angsty half hour dramas, it's just kind of a downer. And I just felt like that's going to be one of the genres that I think is going to have the biggest tune out effect, because I'm not so sure people really want to, like, you know, if they're struggling in, you know, in life somehow, like if your marriage is crumbling, you probably don't want to watch Togetherness. And you know, if you're 40 something and you feel like you're just not where you're supposed to be, or even 30 something, you can draw parallels. These guys in the show are 40, but like if you're not there, it's kind of a downer. You're wishing you were somewhere else, and here's a show that's reflecting back these same things,
right,
which feels good for a while, but after you marinate in a little bit, you're like, okay, kind of a downer.
You know, I think that it's funny. We talk about a lot of being the platinum age of TV, a lot of great shows, and not everybody watches everything. I do wonder, when you've got such a glut of good stuff, how much, in the end, your kind of frame of mind and your personal perspective end up being the things that you choose. Because it used to be like you'd have to watch the good stuff because there was so little of it. But now, if so much of it is good, and then something is sort of like, it's good, but it's about a subject that makes me kind of feel funny, I'm like, yeah, I got other things I can watch that make me feel better. So maybe I'll just let that one go by.
Yeah, it was tough because it's such a great cast. You know, I had other issues with it too. I think that there's a little bit of you know, wish fulfillment in some of these things. I'm sure that some of the actresses on these shows, and this goes back to CBS when he was always the really heavy set schlubby guy and the hot wife.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was a trend for a long time. But I think that there's a point where you're looking at this and you're thinking, okay, great. It's a little bit wish fulfillment that you're this person and you're all kind of schlubby and, you know, whatever. And maybe you don't have it all going for you, and you're mopey and you're nerdy or whatever, something. You don't always get the hot chick and then get another one. And my feeling in this is that if you do, because it does happen, it's great. That's why we live this life. But if you do get the hot chick, like they do in Togetherness, the Alex character meets this wonderful, wonderful woman who's smart and funny and sexy. I don't think that guy messes it up, is what I'm saying. I don't think that guy says, you know, I'm going to take you for granted and kind of ruin this relationship, and I'm going to work on this side project. I don't know. That doesn't work for me. And I think that, like, even though Mark Duplass is great, you know, he's a fine looking gentleman, and they kind of nerd him down for the show, and they make him more of a, you know, a little bit milquetoast. But even he, when he goes to, you know, he's really feeling depressed, and he goes back to Detroit with Alex, his friend, and they immediately come to this like house party thing, and of course the hot girl seeks him out, and like there's this flirty, sexy encounter, and I'm like, this guy has like barely showered, he is depressed, he is no personality barely right now, and the hot girl's gonna like hang out with you and like want you to sleep with her, and it's a little bit of wish fulfillment in that way where I'm like, okay, I'm kind of tired of that, guys. Like, if this guy's, you know, if this guy's marriage is crumbling, let it crumble. Don't let him find like the beautiful girl he grew up with just waiting at the house party by herself. I just don't think that ever happens.
Yeah. Yeah, it's nice. I mean,
it's for storytelling purposes. I get it, but
it's always pretty people on TV. But there's that time where you can get shaken out of the kind of acceptance of it and be like, what am I seeing here?
Well, the togetherness roots itself in like being very granular about emotions and the institution of marriage and failure to like get your dreams. It's very real in that sense. So I don't mind that there's good-looking people and on TV, and you have to have it that way. I do mind that like the Alex character, you know, gets his dream. His life is back together. He's really got it going on, and even then, I don't think a guy like that who has suffered for so long looks over at this incredibly hot woman who just adores him and like is cool about everything. I don't think he blows that. And that's the part of the realism where I'm like, okay, guys, in the pursuit of a story, you decided to have him blow that when you took your eye off the ball as far as realism goes. That would just never happen. Mm. So those are the things that bug me. And then as I go on and I finish that review, I still love the series, but it would be so much better if that cast, which is really funny, and they can be very funny together when they're writing, what if it was not such a downer? Would it be such a bad thing? I don't know.
Girls is also coming back for season 5, mm-hmm. I think now.
Yeah.
On the 21st as well. Any thoughts of that? Have you been checking in on that? I know you didn't write the review.
Yeah, Dan wrote the review, and I think Dan did a pretty good job, because it's really hard in the 5th season to come up with something. I mean, unless the show is imploding or it takes a different direction or has a time jump, critically, there's sometimes not much to say about it. So Dan's approach was, he's like, girls is girls. If you've liked it before, you're going to like it now. He pointed out the flaws of it. He just says, you know, it's still good. It's still what it is. It's maddening. These four girls have grown a little bit. Girls, I say. These women have grown a little bit. But they're still basically stunted in their own ways, which is maddening to people who don't like the show and probably funny and entertaining to those who do. So I think that Dan probably hit it like, you know, it's season 5. No one's coming to this fresh. No one's going to wake up and say, hey, I heard about this show called Girls. I think I'm going to check it out. That I'm not sure that person really exists right now. And if they do, they're going to start on season 1. So if you're coming to season 5, you know what you're going to get. And basically he just says, it's a good show for those who already like the show.
All right, fair enough. I watched season 1, and I think I just never got back to it. I think, you know, I thought it was good, and then for whatever reason, and I don't even know the reason, I just sort of never felt like super motivated to pick it up.
I loved the first season. I actually really liked the show. I think in the second season, I was really overwhelmed by all the think pieces about it. I was like, okay, people, too much navel-gazing about what this show gets right and what it gets wrong. Too much picking on Lena Dunham about her body and what she's doing. You know, it really took away from the focus of the actual show. And, you know, there was a period where it kind of did take a little creative dip, but I think it was really strong last year and funny and different. So, but again, you got to kind of have to be a fan of it. And I think part of the fatigue that I felt about Girls was just reading other people's disdain for it when they weren't watching it anymore. I'm like, okay, great, we got it. This is not a show you like, so let's not do a third think piece about it. Move on.
Yeah, just let it go.
Let it go.
You didn't like it. It's
no.
There was some big industry news this week too. Paul Lee, who is the head of drama, head of scheduling, his head of drama has replaced him. Paul Lee was the head of programming basically for ABC, and he's gone. And instead, Channing Dungey has has what was referred to by you in your piece that we'll link to in the show notes as the smoldering seat of doom. Although our friend Ben Marvels tweeted at us, "Ahoy, new captain of the dinosaur ship," going back to our classic dinosaur ship metaphor of a previous episode. Yeah,
I love that. I read Ben's tweet and I thought, you know, if only I had thought about that metaphor as I was writing it. But I also had a good time writing about that because it's, you know, industry stuff is, I love it. You know, it's failure analysis is what I love to write about more than anything, way more than reviews. And it's hard, you know. Nobody saw this coming, which is funny because there's been the Deadpool on Paul Lee's tenure as the ABC Entertainment president has been pretty much started like a year after he was there. But I like Paul, and as I wrote in that rundown of what happened, yeah, there were times when I'm sure he was going to go, and as I noted in the piece, like, when Kevin Reilly got fired from Fox, everybody was like, wow, who knew that Paul Lee would be the sort of the last man standing? I mean, you take CBS out of the equation because that's such a German machinery over there. It just hums. They just pass the baton. I've run basically they say at CBS, you know, I've kept us at number one for 7 or 8 years. I'm tired. Here, take the baton. You run it for 5 or 6 years as number one.
Yep. It's not just keep that. Oiling the machine.
Keep oiling the machine. And yeah. But yeah, as I said, she's the first African American woman to run a network, and I noted, you know, she welcome to the world's worst job in television.
Yeah, because that was a classic Onion joke when Obama got elected. It's like, you know, once again, America gives the worst job to the black man.
Yeah,
like yay,
black man gets worst job in America.
Yeah, congratulations. It's a terrible job, but it's a heck of a career accomplishment for her. Interesting move on ABC's part, but yeah, it's because now you just there's nowhere to go but down from there, right?
Well, yeah, that and you know it's a little bit wonky inside baseball, but I think our listeners are kind of into that. The weird part about it is that she has her hand on a lot of the hits and misses as well because she's the head of drama,
right?
Yeah, so she's not coming in from the outside like she was a agent or she ran a separate studio. She's part of the mix here, and so when she comes in to run it, she's not going to have as much. She's not going to have as much latitude for failure because I think people like me are going to say, "Look, you've been in this job for a long time. You kind of know what you're doing, and your free pass doesn't extend as long as anybody else." And the other part about it is that she's taking over for basically her boss, who was fired in a power struggle. And he stepped down, however you want to say it. So he steps down, he loses the power struggle, and the person who wins hires this woman. But the person who won, part of the reason that he made the change is he sees a different vision for ABC than Paul Lee, who had a lot of power until Ben Sherwood took over. And Ben Sherwood is like, the part that I wrote about how hard it is for entertainment presidents to turn things around anyway, because institutionally it is that dinosaur ship.
That's the dinosaur ship.
That's the dinosaur ship. But now you have a new guy who basically has his own vision and he wants you to do it. So, you know, this is a Bay Area kind of analysis.
I was about to say, it's like Brian Sabian being made the whatever president of baseball for the Giants and bringing in a new general manager. You know, he's still the guy in charge. Mm-hmm. You know, his title is different. And it seems like maybe Ben Sherwood is similarly like, you know, Paul Lee leaving is like the resolution of you can't have two bosses here.
Right.
Were you going for Brian Sabian? Is that
I was going for that. And I think there's, yes, because I think that he's going to call the shots and she's going to say, yeah, you're the guy and you just fired my boss. Yeah. So yeah, that sounds good.
You know, how much of a change in the end is it if the real story is just that they don't need two head chefs at Disney ABC? And since Ben Sherwood is now has won the power struggle to be in charge, then, you know, Paul Lee goes away and You know, and it's great for Channing Dungey. I hope she can put her stamp on it and all, but it's a difficult position because she's got a boss. You know, there's another layer above her that maybe, you know, wouldn't have been there in the past.
Right. And she can sort of flex her muscles because she was head of drama. Now she can have oversight and say into how they do their comedies, which, by the way, are not the problem of the network.
No.
They're doing great with those.
Yeah.
They definitely need more help in unscripted. So she's going to have to, like, make her mark there. You know, it's funny because she comes from the drama side and the new guy wants more CBS-like procedurals. And I'm not sure that's kind of how that network is built. So it'll be really interesting for her to take over.
A lot of Shonda Rhimes on that network. Can Shonda do, franchising and proceduralizing like CBS style?
I think she could probably do whatever she wants. But whether she wants to do that, I think she could do it. I think she could pull that off because some of the How to Get Away with Murder and that stuff, it is a little bit serialized. Mm-hmm. And that's not 1000% her own show, but yeah, I think she can do whatever she wants, but like, I'm not sure that Shonda, that's the storytelling that intrigues her, that it, you know, that it's snapped shut in the 59th minute. I think she wants to have all these long drawn out storylines and stuff, as most people do in current, you know, platinum age of television. It's a serialized story. So the new guy doesn't want that. So I don't know, good for her, good for Channing. Cause it's a new job for her. It's history's made in her hiring. It was kind of one of the last hurdles for the industry to, at least on the television side, network side, to do. And I wish her the best. It's literally not a job I can imagine anybody wanting. And by the way, just as an aside, I got emails from people who, let's just say they've been in that job before, and they were like, oh my God, who would want this job anymore? So I'm not the only one who's been thinking it's the worst job in TV.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I wish her luck. She's also got the Disney, you know, the whole Disney synergy thing where, like, the Marvel shows, as you pointed out in your piece, have underperformed, I think, by all expectations. Mm-hmm. Agent Carter's going to go off. They're working on a potential spinoff of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s ratings are not particularly spectacular. And, you know, she may want to have a fresh take on that, but it's also, you know, that's a corporate synergy thing that is going on where, you know, Disney owns Marvel and ABC, and they're all part of the, you know, this brand strategy that they've got. And she may, you know, I don't know, she may have her hands tied there.
Oh yeah, I would say that anything that has the word Marvel on it is above her pay grade.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, you know, you and I talked, I think it was last podcast number 70, about, I think we had a little aside about the future of Agent Carter and will they or won't they. Well, I think it's dead now.
yeah,
if it had any chance of coming back under Paulie, I don't think it has any chance under the new guy.
Unless the synergy police pop up
which could be above Ben Sherwood's pay grade, right?
Yeah. I mean, you could also see, I don't know, it'll be interesting to see because Marvel has had so much success with Netflix as a partner.
Yes.
And that stuff gets acclaimed. And then the ABC stuff is sort of considered watered down and not that exciting. Although I've heard, again, very good things about Agent Carter, but the ratings aren't particularly interesting. At what point does, it'll be interesting to see whether they say, no, it's very important that there be a Marvel presence on ABC at all times, whatever it is. And maybe they change what the shows are, bring in some new shows, but they want to keep the stamp. They could alternately just sort of say, it didn't really work. Netflix is a better place for this kind of content. Let's just put it there. And maybe that's what they do. I don't know.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because I frankly cannot see ABC becoming CBS. I can see why they would want to, because it is the only one of the four networks that's consistently putting shows out there that people want. But you also, those are also skewing a little bit older, so...
Yeah, don't they want to be the CW maybe a little bit?
I don't know. I think ABC's brand is actually pretty strong. I mean, it's a very female-centric brand.
Right. You got the Shonda shows. Mm-hmm. You got the good comedies. You got the Bachelor franchise, which still does fine. And I that's the reality show I hear most talked about on Twitter these days is The Bachelor, believe it or not.
Yeah.
As tired as it seems to me, people are still into it. So, it's maybe ABC... It'll be interesting to see if they make some attempts to not be ABC and then have to go back, go back home.
Yeah, exactly.
After they fail. Lick their wounds.
As I said on, I didn't put it in that story, but You know, Sherwood comes from ABC News. And the last time a broadcast network had a news guy take over, bad things happened.
That was the Zucker era, the Zuckerification, the failing upward.
Failing upward. Jeff Zucker. Let me take this number one network and drive it into the ground. Mm-hmm. Now, I will quit when it's number four.
Yeah.
But I will.
Bye, guys. I got to go ruin CNN. See you later.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so good.
Mm.
That's why writing about the industry is so great.
Yeah. Failure analysis. It's like. Speaking of failure analysis, I would just mention we do a bunch of TV episode review based stuff on the TV podcast of The Incomparable. And one of the problems with that is that you commit, and you've seen this with, like, Sepinwall does this when he's reviewing a show episode by episode, and we do this with podcasts. At some point, sometimes you go, yeah, I'm not going to watch this anymore. Sorry. I know I committed to doing this, but I can't do it anymore. And we actually did that this week for Legends of Tomorrow, where we're like, we can't. I mean, every episode was us explaining how we thought that this was a misfire and that the premise was too complicated, and they built a show with like eight with no lead actor, sort of like a bunch of supporting actors rattling around, but no lead unifying force and all that. And we just said we can't do this anymore. So
I was very surprised by following your tweets on that. I was like, we need to bring this up on TVTM because you are the man who's that. But I was like, I guess it's you know, just in a nutshell what you just said. I was surprised how quickly you were like, okay, I'm done with this.
Well, I'm gonna keep watching it, but you know, I felt like we had three podcasts in a row where we just kept picking apart the premise and saying, you know, there are too many characters and there's no lead character at all. And it doesn't really function like an ensemble. And even an ensemble show usually has somebody you can kind of hang your hat on as the main, and then kind of everybody spins around them a little bit, and it doesn't really do that. And it's just kind of confused, and it's too bad because they've done other good work in the past, but it's not working for me. I'll keep watching it. Maybe they'll figure it out. Maybe it'll get better as they go, but it just gets difficult after a while when all you want to do is list all the reasons why it's still not working. Also, bizarrely, all the first four episodes, the first half hour is terrible and the second half hour is okay. And I think I figured it out is that basically they're competent at sort of doing buddy cop scenes and fight scenes, mm-hmm. the action pieces, but they spend a half an hour trying to just like mired in the exposition.
Yeah.
As Dan Feinberg said, the legends of exposition.
Right.
And it takes them 30 minutes to get their wheels out of the mud before they can start moving, and it's just not fun. It's not to watch that.
Yeah, and as an aside, as somebody who's not watching that, I will just say that it's another example of how networks they want to copy everything, even their own stuff. And so at some point they don't look at cable or Netflix or whatever and see what makes those good shows or even great shows. What makes them great is a singular vision working on the show all the time, not somebody working on three shows. So sometimes you extend your talent and your creative people too thin because you're like, let's make another one. You're so good at these other two.
You can sort of see it. The Flash and especially Arrow, I feel like, has they're doing better. Arrow's doing better than it did last year. But I think you can see that they're spread too thin. And then you throw Supergirl in there too. And I know that it's not all just Greg Berlanti. He's got a whole team of people. But it does feel like they're maybe spread a little too thin and that they spent a little too much time setting the spinoff up instead of servicing their own stories. And then, as for the spinoff, I think they've really got this very good template that they understand about having a main character with some really interesting supporting casts, and Legends of Tomorrow basically inverts that and it doesn't work. So I don't know, it's too bad because I had hopes for that show and there's a lot of fun things in it, but it just never seems to come off. So maybe they'll figure it out or they'll give up.
It's right. I think both, right? So both the CW is what you're saying, both the CW and ABC have to think long and hard about these comic book franchises that maybe watered down too much.
How do they work and why do they work? I mean, people like Daredevil and Jessica Jones, people like Agent Carter, and people like Flash and Arrow. Well, those are, and Supergirl even, I would say keeps getting better. I'm on the fence about it. I think it's okay, but I think it's gotten better. But those are all kind of clear, understandable main character kind of templates. There's a strong main character. This is the show about this hero. And Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and Legends of Tomorrow aren't that. And I think they suffer as being sort of not about anything and with no star.
Right. I totally back that. And at a at the risk of just sidebarring us to death here, I would do one more and say, because it's in the same thing, and I haven't seen the movie yet, but a really fascinating story of how Deadpool got made and why it took so long for it to go, which I think gets at this idea of what works or what doesn't work as a comic franchise. THR did a magnificent story about not only how long it took to make that thing happen, but then in the end, one of our writers who's followed the whole thing says he thinks he knows who leaked it, which is how it got made. That's just a really interesting story.
They did a test trailer and leaked it, and then people mm-hmm. talked about it.
Yeah, so I haven't seen it yet, so that's, to me, was interesting.
Yeah, it's we'll see what happens. It's when you get at the end of your comfort zone, what happens? And if you're Marvel or if you're Netflix or if you're ABC, like what do you do after that?
Oh yeah, and I can guarantee you, by the way, just if you want to know how networks work, we did talk a little bit about the transition at ABC and leadership. I guarantee you that on both of these networks meetings, they are saying to their people, why does it work on Netflix? That's what they're hearing. Whoever's making these are like, why does this work so well on Netflix and it does, and we can't get it to work like that. So that's that's not our problem. That's not our problem to deal with. But I guarantee you, that's what people are hearing.
Yeah, We'll go to the letters here. But I had one other note based sort of follow up on something we talked about a while ago, which is you talked for a while about talking to BBC America about how hard it is for them to establish a show and establish a night and have visibility into any viewership. And so they did this beachhead on Saturdays. They hard program Saturdays. That's where they put their originals and their acquisitions and their co productions. That's like Saturday night BBC America, send the message. So they announced this week that Orphan Black is coming on April 14th, which is a Thursday. Mm-hmm. So any thoughts about that? It sounds like they feel like confident enough to kind of expand and get people watching on a different night.
Yeah, I think it's not a bad idea. I don't know why they did Thursday night and Sunday night are so hard. But I think they're swinging for the fences here. I think you have an established show, and they know at this point that everybody who watches Orphan Black will move to Thursday and watch it. It's a hugely time shifted series anyway because of the fact it was on Saturday. So maybe they're going to say, "Hey, if we don't put this on Saturday, do we actually get at Live Plus 3 instead of Live Plus 7? I mean, what are our ratings going to be like in a real time? I mean, no one cares about same day really anymore, but I think they're going to test that. They know that they have a built-in audience that moves to Thursday, and if they get a substantial number of viewers to make that switch from Saturday to Thursday, then you have your beachhead on a new night for BBC, and I think that's a good thing, because then you can stick something else in there, and then now you've got Saturday and Thursday, and they had to do it at some point. So I think it's smart, although I'm dubious about the success, but we'll see.
Yeah, we'll have to see. It did feel awfully crowded. I mean, I actually think that their ambitions ran up on just not being able to program anymore on Saturday.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I mean, I think they have a lot of stuff, and I think they're also comfortable, by the way. I think they're comfortable in this new universe, the Platinum Age and Peak TV. I think they're comfortable with how they're doing, and I think that they feel like they're going to continue to produce stuff, and they need another beachhead, and even if the ratings are not that great, it keeps them in business, keeps the lights on.
And that is their most successful original, I think. Yeah. I don't know about the ratings. I would think that Doctor Who does very well, but it is they're picking that up from the BBC, which airs it on Saturday, and so they're not going to move it because they're going to air that same day. But they get to choose when Orphan Black drops. So
right, that's really astute, because you're right. No, that would not work with
Yeah, everybody would just, pirate it. So, they're not going to do that. But they control when people see Orphan Black. So yeah, April 14th, exactly. If you're waiting to see season 4 of Orphan Black, April 14th. Mm-hmm. I need to finish season 3. I'm still in the middle of season 3. I got lost track. Too much TV, Tim. Too much. Yes, it's times of confusion.
I hear that. I've heard that refrain.
All right. We're going to do the letters. We should do the letters.
Okay, let's do that.
But first, get ready. We have a sponsor.
Oh, look at that.
I know. The check will be in the mail. Mm-hmm. Our sponsor is Mack Weldon, who would like you to know that Mack Weldon is better than whatever you're wearing right now. That's right. Mac Weldon.
Nice.
Mac Weldon believes in smart design. They have premium fabric, simple shopping. I went there and I bought some underpants. As we've said before, I enjoy saying
said,
the word
we have
underpants.
Said the words underpants. Yes,
I'll check that box. Mm-hmm. I bought some socks. I actually really like their socks. Their socks are awesome. They have striped socks. They're pretty cool. No one else can see them, but I know I'm wearing striped socks. Very easy to do. You know, you click a couple of buttons and put in your credit card number, and they come to your door, and they are really incredibly high quality. This is high quality stuff, much better than the junk that I was buying at Target. Let me just put it that way. All the Mac Weldon stuff is naturally antimicrobial, which means it eliminates odor. You won't be stinky with this stuff. And it's super comfortable stuff, but if you're not comfortable with that first pair that you buy over the internet, that's okay. You can keep it. Tell them that you weren't comfortable and they will refund your money. No questions asked. So Mac Weldon's underwear, socks, shirts, they all look good and they perform well. Good for working out, good for going to work, good for going out on dates. It's good for life, good for everything about life. So go today, Mac Weldon, MacWeldon.com. That's MacWeldon.com. And you can use this code, TV Talk.
Woohoo!
TV Talk. And get 20% off. 20% off.
I like that.
Full yeah. 1/5 sliced right off your bill. So thanks to Mac Weldon for sponsoring the TV Talk Machine. Look at that. Sponsor.
I'm glad you did the math on that.
I did. I converted 1/5. A percentage into a fraction.
I know. I was like, whoo.
Yes.
Lightning
yes.
speed.
Well, my kids are in math, so I've got to up my. It is 1/5, right? Yeah, it's 1/5. Good.
Oh, well, you don't ask me. My yeah. kids show me the math, and I'm like, you know what? Look at that over there. And then
yeah.
I walk away.
Yeah, look, a butterfly. Look. Gotta go.
Yeah.
All right.
They say, look at, what am I doing, Daddy? What am I doing wrong here? I'm like, you know what? Here's $20.
Yeah.
I'll see you later.
Maybe check the internet, kids. Internet does math, right? That's the computers. They're good at math. I have three tweets to tell you about. Curated TV on Twitter says, am I the only one who liked season one of Better Call Saul as much, if not more, than Breaking Bad?
Yes.
Yes. The only one. Sorry. Curated TV. Now you know. You're alone on that island.
Yeah.
Let's see. Dean from the 707 has a new report. He is watching Evening Shade in the 479, which is Arkansas. Because the only other option was reality TV.
I want that guy's travel budget.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive.
Oh, yeah.
And Dean also suggests that perhaps ABC one day could do a live Lion King. That's a good idea. That's total corporate synergy. One of those Disney
yeah.
Broadway shows? Do it on ABC?
Yeah. And as I said in the piece that we'll link to, she's just going to need to like invest in musicals. Because yeah. like it or not, and I'm not a big musical fan, it's here to stay.
It's a thing. Could you yeah. imagine how much money they will one day back up to Lin-Manuel Miranda's door for Hamilton?
Oh
like
God.
Hamilton on TV?
Oh
like they just take $1 billion. Just yeah. let us.
Yeah.
There's money. That's how that way. If you strike it rich on Broadway, that's how you do it. Now it's everybody's going with their tin cans and saying, you know, here, please deposit yeah. some money.
Yeah,
and I'll put your show on my network.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's got it. He's got his future set for him.
Yeah. He's doing okay. And then one more tweet, which is from Droopy Lid. All right.
All right.
Said, I believe you guys talked about this, but Vinyl's ratings are exactly why HBO wishes they didn't have to disclose their ratings. We talked about how Netflix is happy not to have anyone know who watches what, and Vinyl premiered, which you liked a lot, and the ratings were bad. And
yes.
I think and there was actually a good piece that I read this week from I can't remember who wrote it that basically said it doesn't matter, and they picked up Vinyl for a second season after mm-hmm. the first one aired, mm-hmm. and so I think Droopy Lid has a good point here, which is, you know, HBO kind of doesn't care what those ratings are, and I'm sure HBO would rather nobody writing stories about how it did badly in the ratings, because why? It's not the point for HBO.
Well, look, and one of the things that this is insight into my current state on Twitter, and you and I talked a little bit on Twitter about Twitter, and the good and bad parts of it. But I will say that one of my 2016 resolutions was to not spend so much time on Twitter, and I exercised that a little bit recently because. You know, I know everybody who I follow, whatever. And so when that came out, somebody was tweeting about overnight ratings on HBO. And I've had so many fights on Twitter with other critics and other people who cover the industry about them not caring. that they don't care about the ratings, and then people would say, well, they do care a little bit, or they must care about this. You know, the genie's out of the bottle with the ratings. They wish they didn't have them. But first of all, I didn't get into that argument because I was like, okay, just turn it off, Tim, walk away. Daily overnights, they are archaic even for broadcast network, where it really matters. So it has no bearing whatsoever on HBO. And yes, the overnight ratings were pretty pathetic on that. But that's a show that's going to – it's like no one knows what's on Netflix, but no one's saying, you know, oh, that's a terrible show. Why did they do it? Well, HBO's going to keep it because it's a – you know, it's a lot of pretty big-name players, and I think they're going to let it breathe. They're a creative outlet. I'm happy that they re-upped it for another 10 because I like the 5 I watched, and I can't wait to watch this whole season and whether people like it or not. And as an industry – as an outlet, HBO – it's worried first and foremost about being a home to creators, open door for people like that. And the way you solidify that is to say, yeah, we just picked you up for a second season. So,
yeah,
I'm happy with them.
No, I agree. But you can see why it's sort of like the story is not the ratings. So I think that does sort of go back to what we said, which is, yeah, they don't matter, but they're reported. So people talk about them, but it's like, that's not the game HBO's playing.
Yeah. How many times can you tweet out? It's a subscription-based service. Mm-hmm.
It doesn't, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
All right. We got some letters. Hobo Eric.
And there you go. I didn't even know it was coming, and I laughed out loud.
Yeah. Hobo Eric again. I felt I had to write in after watching this week's American Crime. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever seen a network show deal with gay issues in this way. Each week they speak about experiences which don't get much airing. Coming out as a teen, different gay desires. Who would have ever thought that a show would talk about BDSM thoughts for a male teen? Sure, they dealt with some of these general issues on Queer as Folk, but that was Showtime, not being watched by 3 million people a week. Add to that the fact that these are mostly underage guys. I'm happy it's there, and I'm more surprised there's no outrage from a million moms or other people on the right. Parents Television Council, I think, is the one that I was thinking of. I guess it shows how far we've come as a people. What do you think?
I think that's two prongs. Yeah, I think that yes, I would like to believe that. I think that if people who knee-jerk complain about this kind of stuff and it goes against their quote-unquote whatever their values are, people who are like that, they're probably not aware that that's going on right now on American Crime. And so there might be some outrage at some point. But yes, I'm happy that, a Disney-owned channel and more importantly, a broadcast network, which has to appeal to the broadest number of people, is taking on this story. And but that's the whole concept of American Crime. It's very – I hate the word, but it's very edgy for what it does. Last year was more race. This year – it's more sexuality and stuff. So it's I'm not following it as much this year, but what I will say is that the people who I like who are following it are kind of completely amazed that it just keeps getting better, and it was better than last year, which is good because I thought last year was a little bit preachy. But yeah, people, if they find out about it, it's again, that's the other great part about, I guess, We always say it's a negative when there's too much TV. Maybe the good part is there's so much TV that people who complain about it all the time, the moralists, maybe there's so much they can't keep up. And so maybe they just haven't got to American Crime yet and say like, oh, we should ban this. They haven't seen it yet because they were like, there's so much TV. How do these TV critics do it?
The Parents Television Council's just got it all on the DVR. They're going to get really outraged this summer when they finally get caught
right, up to it. When they come to it. But yeah, it's great. It's great that they're doing it. And I would agree with Hobo Eric that it's that – that's the first time that I think that some of those issues, certainly outside of Showtime and Queer as Folk, which was already a niche show, it's kind of amazing that it's happening on a broadcast network. And here, great, by the way.
Got a quick one from Design Geek Jess. From the 617. She says, I finally got around to watching Jessica Jones. It's a great show. And my first chance to identify something that is not a thing. In the first episode, Jessica wants to get paid. Carrie Ann Moss says she'll talk to payroll. Payroll won't handle contractors. The request would go to accounts payable. It's a minor, not a thing, but it was fun to catch it nonetheless. Thank you, Jess. She's got you. You got me there. Absolutely right.
You gotta say that TBTM has everything covered.
Yeah, that's an HR not a thing right there.
That's an HR not a thing.
Amazing.
Like if we had a sidebar of things are not a thing, someone would be clicking through that and they'd say, you know, I've never seen anyone talk about a payroll / HR issue.
Yeah. Well, and you know, the producers of Jessica Jones were like, God, I thought nobody would catch that. Damn it. Design Geek just, damn it.
Design Geek just nothing gets by her.
No, because she's done that. That is also somebody who's done a lot of freelance work, I think, right there.
Yeah. And wait till she gets to a future episode. She goes, you know, I think that's a knockoff, that chair.
Yeah.
And we'll get that letter.
This one's from our friend My Vogon Poetry in the 716, not the holler. and he writes, I was looking back at some of Tim's latest reviews and was happy to see so many were positive. I like the visual picture of a bastard machine that finds the good elements of shows. I find that the mood I am in greatly affects the enjoyment of the show. Very rarely a show can change my mood. I'm currently binge watching Man Seeking Woman, and this excellent comedy can solicit a smile even from dark days. I was wondering, do you have a previewing ritual that cleanses your mental palate before reviewing a show, or do you have to take into account your mental state, happy or bastardy, when viewing? And then he says, love the simultaneous world release every Friday. Oops, it makes my day. Sorry. My book on poetry. Do you do something MVP. To prepare? Like, do you do like a little mental reset of like trying to kind of step away from whatever you've been thinking about before you consume something, or is it not like that?
Well, you know, that's another great question from MVP. And
MVP.
Yep. That's pretty nice, huh? Because it's very thoughtful about kind of what someone in my job does. I'm not sure I've put too much thought into that, like thinking out loud like I am now about it. But yeah, I've done it because I know there are times when I'm like, oh, I can't even look at this. I'm either distracted or I'm mad or. But if I normally the show dictates the mood, that's how I look at it. If it's really crappy, it's going to make me mad. If it's good and I'm already in a good mood, maybe I'm more joyous about it. Or if I'm in a bad mood and it turns my mood around and I'm thinking, oh, that was really super funny, that would change it. I guess I haven't put too much thought into it. But yeah, I would say that it is something that I'm subconsciously thinking about, because if I'm not in the right frame of mind to review it, I will put it off until later. Oftentimes I do my viewing late at night. When I'm in a, you know, I'm better, like I'm mellowed out. All the deadlines of the day and all the schlepping kids around and, you know, whatever doctor's appointments, they're all done. And then I can just sit down and to exhale. And then my mind is clear. I'm like, okay, what do you got? Let's see what you've got. So that's a great question. And I would think a little bit side part of that is that, for example, because it was such a good question, I just want to say that I sat down to watch Togetherness, which we've talked about already. Mm-hmm. And I think there was a part of me, and I don't know if it was, so this is why it's a great question. What if I had come home and I was in an amazing mood and I'm super upbeat and I was like, okay, Togetherness, and I start off, maybe all the good, because there's a lot of other more positive reviews I've seen since I wrote mine, or at least seen people's tweets saying how much they love it. And I found that the last couple of reviews I've written are a little bit more complex, and they're like, yeah, I like something, but here are all, for example, Better Call Saul and Togetherness are two reviews, if you look at them, that where I actually like the show, but I'm talking about all the things that it's struggling with. And I wonder if I was like in maybe in a better mood when I sat down for Togetherness, I wouldn't have said, oh God, more angsty marriage problems and, you know, more, you know, people who can't get their lives together. I can't take any more of this because there's so much of it. So there's a possibility. But normally I just try to, I don't have any rituals, but I do try to sit down and say, okay, what do you got? And, you know, it's the Nirvana thing. Here we are, entertain us.
Let's see. Mark in the 360 next to the 503 and far away from the 206. That's a lot of numbers, man.
That's so good, though.
A lot of numbers. Thank you for suggesting good shows for my wife and me to watch. We would have missed Jane the Virgin if it hadn't been for your suggestion, and we love season one. But season two has been clunky, predictable, and worst of all, half the time they seem to just be trying to fill up space. Is this a thing? A knock it out of the park first season followed by weak writing in the second season? I've seen many shows do this. Thanks. Now, there is a term for that I've heard the sophomore slump.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is Jane the Virgin having a sophomore slump?
I don't think so. No, I disagree with
Mark.
Yeah, I disagree with the assumption that it's actually not that it's clunky. I think they've done a pretty good job of it. but I would also say I tend to binge it a little bit more because I put it off for a long time. I think the hard part, and I went out of my way to talk about Jane in this way, is that, you know, that was the only network show that made my top 46 of best shows on television because they're different playing field and stuff. But boy, 22 episodes a year is insanity. And so, you know, maybe what he's feeling, and you know, his reactions are legit. If he's feeling that it's time filling and it's, you know, play, you know, if they're just burning up time and if it's kind of clunky, I would say his personal reaction has to, I'm sure it ties directly into there being 22 episodes, not 13 or 10. I think they're doing a pretty good job for what they do, and I enjoy the characters. And I think that what they're trying to do just conceptually is really difficult. So I guess I cut them a little bit more slack on that. So
do you think, you know, there's this trend of having these mid-season finales and then, you know, winter finales and all of
yes.
that. But you know, I wonder sometimes if the crushing, you know, 22 obligation of doing 22 episodes of a network TV show, would they be better served if they really conceived it as two seasons, two 13 episode, 12 episode, 10 episode seasons, and tell a complete story and have it be over and then tell another story and almost structure it like that? Because most of these shows that are on for 22 episodes, it doesn't feel like they wrap anything up 13 episodes in. They're telling a 22 episode long story. And sometimes I wonder if they'd be better off telling two stories.
I think you're right. I think that's been a complaint for a long time, and that people who it's so weird to be having this conversation in some ways, because so few of us critics, well, I mean, not everybody, I can't speak for everybody, but so few of us really talk now so much about network and the struggles and woes of network, because they're just not a player as far as the bigger outside of comedy. They're not a right. player in the bigger picture. I think maybe American Crime and Jane and some of the others are in it. But yeah, they would definitely do better, Jason, to conceptualize it as 212 or 213 or whatever. Because you could, and you can do more with it creatively. I think there's probably some other constraints that would set in network wise. Also, the network has to be willing. Just to throw this back, I'm sure you remember. Remember when 24 was so much better when they would just let them film a bunch of episodes and then run it all in January so that you could there was no interruptions? Because right. when you interrupted 24, it was insanity. It
right,
was like,
they
really?
Start in January and they double pumped a couple, mm-hmm. you know, for a couple weeks. And yeah, there's a good post on the masked scheduler about that idea that they finally figured out to, you know, sort of double pump it at the beginning and do a couple of things out of season at the end, but get it all running continuously without any break. And that was much better because it had momentum there. And, you know, I don't know if 22 episode shows are going to continue to exist. I suppose if they're wildly successful, there's a cash grab aspect of it. But if they do exist, like if they're going to make them, you know, make 22 episodes of The Flash every year, for an example, I think I'd kind of rather see two story arcs and not 22 episodes was built for an era where there weren't continuing storylines. It was just right. just churn out as many standalone episodes as you want. But in a continuing storyline era, I don't think you can have a continuing storyline that's that long without just having like horrible SAG or having so many plot lines that it's a soap opera, like Jane the Virgin or some of the other, you know, sort of nighttime soaps. So but if you're doing a drama or even a superhero kind of show, I feel like it's just that's a long bridge to build, to have like set up your villain in episode one and pay it off in 22. It's a long way to go.
Yeah, and I think part of them cutting them slack, which, you know, not everybody will, obviously, is the fact that I know how hard it is to do that. And I know that everybody hits a wall, and your writer's room gets depleted. The show gets successful, and those writers go get other jobs. And so it's really hard to maintain that quality. I wish that Jane was a 13-episode show. I think that's not only the future, it's the present.
Yeah.
So network television is so horribly out of date with what people want. you know, no one wants 22 episodes of anything is my feeling. Certainly not the bulk of them. And it doesn't fit your budget. It doesn't make any sense for your stars. Right. It's just archaic.
Yeah. Yep. I agree. We got a couple more. Rick in the 703, that's the DC area.
Okay.
Suggestion for our friend William Blake Heron, the Agent X Files. Dick Cheney sends Agent X to Iraq on a mission to find weapons of mass destruction built by aliens. Very nice. See, we got a little Agent X reference in there.
And I have to get back on the. I just gave up on the X Files. I haven't been following. Have you been following?
I have been.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Well, the third episode was very good. And the fourth episode was fine. I would say it was sort of standard X-Files. And now and they just aired the fifth episode, so there's one more to go. And so, which means we're back into the Chris Carter episodes again. And I'd say the fifth episode, I liked it in some ways because I felt structurally it was kind of weird and interesting. Unfortunately, my guess is that it was weird and interesting because Chris Carter isn't. Maybe a very good writer, but still it was kind of like, oh, this is not what I expected. That said, I had some serious problems with it because of, you know, it's about a fundamentalist Islamic terrorist, an Islamic terrorist in America who blows up like an art gallery or a museum. And boy, that's not an interesting story. Because that's just like a story, like that. It's been how long since 9/11? It's in the news. Like, put an interesting spin on it. There's no interesting spin. He's just a guy who you see. You know, do I need any show where the first scene is somebody who's a Muslim who's praying, and bowing and praying, and that it's just a, you know, 4 minutes later they blow something up. It's like, but wow, why did you, I mean, it's just, there's nothing new. There's nothing interesting. It's the same thing we talked about. I feel like Chris Carter just is, he's got the keys to that franchise and is not the right person to be doing it and doesn't have anything interesting to say. And his episodes aren't as good. So in the end, my feeling is going to be the X-Files came back maybe better than it left when it was season 9 and it was on fumes, but it didn't, you know, and I'd be happy to see more, but, you know, meh. Not terrible, but not like, boy, they should bring it back immediately for 10 more. If Chris Carter's going to write them.
And you're saying you want a designated driver.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah.
Take the keys.
Yeah, I think he's holding it back. I think he's not, whether he's rusty or whether it's just this is, you know, he got lucky in making that show and now he's going to write it. But his stuff hasn't impressed me like some of the people who worked for him back in the day who did some better work. So
wow.
I don't know.
All right.
I don't know. Hey, Sam in the 601 has a quick one about Hulu. Wired did a story about how Hulu is trying to up its game in terms of originals. I feel like there's almost been a shame built into being popcorn populist, said a Hulu executive, but we embrace that. They came up with a mantra, a Hulu show is a New York Post story with a New Yorker cover, to which Sam says, good grief. We're going to put lipstick on a pig and call it Netflix. What should we expect with a new direction of Hulu is essentially what Sam is getting to here.
Oh, that is interesting because I'm not so sure I've seen that in the execution so far. Mm-hmm. It might be something that's coming up. I mean, you can't say 11/22/63 is like that at all.
I watched that premiere. I thought it was good.
Yeah. And I think the stuff that they've done in the past has been pretty strong. And I certainly like that they went out and found Moon Boy. And I think that, obviously not, it's not their show, but, you know, The Wrong Man's. And I think that their critical eye has been pretty sharp. That description is very disturbing. Because you don't want a New York Post story with a New Yorker cover on it, because then you didn't get the New Yorker cover you thought. You got a New York Post thing, and you'll be disappointed. So I don't know. I didn't see that story, but that might be future stuff. That might be future program. I haven't seen it yet. I haven't seen anything that's on Hulu that I think has been really terrible. In fact, I would think Netflix and Amazon have done much more mainstreaming stuff, where I'm like, you know, that's basically a network show. If you talk about Bosch, and Amazon has some stuff where you're like, okay, really? Why do you do that? So I haven't seen that on Hulu yet, but it could be coming.
Let's see. Jason in the 254, although he claims 713. That's sort of like having two passports, I think. Jason says, I recently started watching River on Netflix, starring the fantastic Stellan Skarsgård. I don't think I've heard it mentioned on the show or seen anything about it on The Hollywood Reporter. It's amazing. Descriptions make it sound like a police drama, but it's really a very deep character study of grief, trauma, and mental wounds set in a police detective's world. Any thoughts about River?
I think River is, yes, I do have thoughts. The thought is that I have not seen it. I didn't hear about it until my friend, Mr. John Doyle, from Canada, made that his number one show of 2015.
Wow.
But that's not super surprising because, you know, that looks like it was an acquisition and sometimes... Black Mirror and Peaky Blinders and stuff like that doesn't get found out in this country until after it's been on, or, you know, God forsake, Moon Boy. I mean, like, that's so people still haven't heard of that, and it's three seasons in. We can't get to everything. I do want to get to that because that was new to me, and I am hearing positive things, but I think you're right. I haven't heard any other critics other than John Doyle say anything about it at all. So. I will look at it. I'll add it to my list.
All right. We have one last letter. It's from another Sam. This is our Sam in the 707.
Mm-hmm. We have more Sams than anyone.
We do. We have a lot of Sams.
We're building our Jasons.
We have some Jasons. We got mm-hmm. a growing number of Sams, burgeoning Sams. Mm-hmm. Got some Sarahs.
We do have
got
a number
some
of
Jens.
Sarahs. We do have Jen.
We're calling basically people with names. Listen,
there's
to
no
podcast,
there's no other actually. Tim that I know. Have you seen another Tim letter?
No, I haven't seen any other Tims. So if you're out there, a Tim, maybe Teacher Tim will come back.
What if he's
still
Tim
a teacher?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so Sam from the 707. It's a long letter, but I'm going to pull a couple of posts out of it. One is he wanted to talk about the OJ show on mm-hmm. FX.
Yeah,
he said I thought the creators were trying to shove the Kardashian kids into it last week when they were watching Daddy on TV and chanting Kardashian in unison, and then this week Dad gives the big speech to the kids about how fame is fleeting and you need to be pure of heart. As the camera panned away, I could only wonder, are they trying to punk this poor dead guy?
I was thinking the same thing. I mean, I don't like the Kardashian stuff, and I thought this last week was not a very good episode at all for a number of reasons. But I didn't review it. If you go back, man, I went back and looked, and the Metacritic rating on that is like so high, and so many really good critics that ranked it at 100. I think a lot of people just gave it a free pass. Not a free pass. I shouldn't say that, but. I think I might revisit it because I have real issues with it. It's entertaining, and it's probably better than a lot of people expected, and it moves quickly. But I think when you throw all these famous actors and put them in these roles where you're duplicating people, eventually it catches up to you. And, you know, clearly a lot of people were not put off by it, but I was. And the Kardashian role, oh, my God, it's terrible. I mean, I feel bad a little bit for Schwimmer because he seems like he's just a dope. And the Kardashian stuff it just made me want to vomit. Yeah.
Sam goes on. Also, did you notice Marsha Clark dropped a motherfucker at the end of this week's episode? I was shocked and delighted. It made me proud to be an American. P.S. I hope I'm this week's reason for the explicit tag. Check the box. Thank you, Sam.
Yeah, Sam, we were almost out. We were almost out and you hit that button.
You did.
Yes, it's and somebody had said, is that the first time? No, it's been used before. There is actually no rule against cable channels using the F-bomb. I know that if you're an ad-supported channel, like FX, FX in the past has said that they were not going to use the F word or the C word. It was just kind of their policy. And I think they have used very judiciously have used the F word before, but they didn't that one. I did notice that, but this part will make, I hope someone laugh. I almost missed that because I was laughing so hard. At the scene that preceded it where Marsha Clark goes in to check on her two kids sleeping in bunk beds. And then she takes a quick look, 10 seconds total, closes the door, goes out and has a smoke outside and opens the paper and finds out that Johnny Cochran is now going to be on the case. And then she lets out the MF bomb. But rewind to that last 10 seconds and you will see Marcia Clark open the door, check on her kids in bunk beds. And the bunk bed is not against any wall. It's literally in the middle of the room, and the top bunk has no rails on it. And so the kid's head is already hanging off one side, which I noticed immediately. And I'm like, why is that thing in the middle of the room, not up against the wall? And then as the camera rose to see Marcia Clark at the door on the far side, and I started dying of laughter. They're like, that poor kid, he's going to fall out and break his neck. Yeah. There's no rails. And I don't know why I was distracted, but somebody in the continuity department didn't pick that up, or people who make that show don't have kids, or they have nannies.
Yeah. And finally from Sam, when are you guys going to talk about HBO announcing the Deadwood movie? And the answer is when the Deadwood movie airs, right?
Yes.
And not a moment before. When you see the Deadwood movie,
yeah,
in your hand, oh, you hold it in your hands.
Yeah.
And not before.
I might not even review it because I might think that they'll hold it and they won't run it. Like, I think the link will evaporate. I want to watch it live. We'll do a live Deadwood finale wrap-up movie as it happens.
Yeah. But not a moment before. And even then, you may actually call like a friend to make sure it's airing on TVs that are not just yours.
Right. Are you seeing what I'm seeing?
Yeah. Fool me once, shame on me. Fool me 90,000 times, shame on Deadwood.
Yeah. And I think at this point, everybody would be disappointed.
Yeah.
Which
also
wouldn't be
probably
that
true.
It would just be, it's going to be Twin Peaks.
Yeah. Well, we've reached the end. That's it.
We nailed one today.
We did. It's a special weekend edition, but that's okay. We covered it all.
We're there for you, and thank you, Jason, for taking some time on the weekend.
Well, thank you. We checked the box. We sold some underwear. We did everything. We're going to release it worldwide. We did everything we needed to do. Basically.
Exactly.
All right. Well, we'll be back next week. Thank you, Tim. Have a good rest of your weekend.
You too.
And bye, everybody out there. See you next time.